You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Friday, everybody. I'm Ethan Westerman filling in today. If you were looking for Matt Jones, if that's why you're here, don't worry, you'll get to hear from him in just a minute. He's down there in Arlington for the College Baseball Classic. We'll talk to him in just a second. You know, October is for football and bonfires. The summer's for pool parties and grill outs. June is for the College World Series, and February, quite frankly, is just for that Flow Sports subscription that you don't plan on keeping until after the month, and that's where we're at right now. We got this baseball classic down there in Arlington this weekend that's on Flow. I've been watching some Flow softball this week, and if you don't feel like biting the bullet and getting that subscription, Matt will be down there with updates all along this weekend. Matt, how you feeling? I know you've been a little bit under the weather.
Yeah, I feel better. I'm getting there, so appreciate you guys.
Yeah, what's it like down there right now? Is it warmer? I'm assuming it's a lot warmer.
No, not really. It's cold. I mean, it's. I haven't stepped outside yet this morning, but you know, I think the high today is somewhere right around freezing. So maybe a little bit warmer than it is back there in Fayetteville. When we got here yesterday, it was the same temperature that it was in Fayetteville, just no snow on the ground.
Goodness. It's it was a fight to get down here from Rogers today. I didn't realize, just kind of how drastic the snowfall amount was from Benton County down to Washington. I mean, where my apartment is, it was pretty heavy. Got a lot more snow up there. Matt, I'm curious. You're down there in Arlington. You were on the road yesterday. Did you happen to see any Arkansas, trucks, cars, anything with the flags going down there? Have you been able to sense any fan migration yet?
Yeah, nothing with the flags. We did pass a couple of cars in southern Oklahoma with Razorback, the Razorback license plates on the back of the car. So it's always tough. Dallas is it's such a different dynamic than so many of the other places where you might end up playing, just because it's so darn big. I mean, like, if you come to a bowl game down here, it's a lot different than, say, going to the Liberty Bowl in Memphis, where everything's kind of concentrated in one area. Everything down here is kind of spread out. But I know that I hear from people every year who come to this thing, and they've said, hey, this time I'm bringing more people with me, or I've told my friends and they're coming, or whatnot. And I think it's going to be some huge crowds tonight. The Saturday night crowd is always the biggest at this, and so I suspect it's going to be a really big crowd tomorrow night, because not only do you have a lot of people who are Razorback fans in this area who will migrate over and come over and watch the team, but then they're playing TCU from right down the road. And when they played here 2 years ago, the attendance for that game was 20,295. And out of that 20,000, I guess about two-thirds of it was Razorback fans. About a third was TCU fans. And that was a really, really cool environment down here. And so because this thing continues to grow every year in terms of Arkansas people who come to this event, as long as TCU holds up its end of the bargain tomorrow night, it could be a really cool environment for that Arkansas-TCU game. They'll play Kansas State tonight. I don't suspect K-State will bring a whole lot of people. My guess is there'll probably be somewhere between 13,000 and 15,000 people in the ballpark, and probably 95% or more will be Razorback fans. So the Hogs play down here. It's like a home game. It's a really, really neat environment. And I always tell people, if you haven't come down here and experienced this, you need to, because – maybe the closest thing I can think of is the old Southwest Conference basketball tournament when the Razorbacks would play at Reunion Arena in downtown Dallas, and the 16,500-seat arena. There'd probably be 15,000-16,000 Razorback fans in it, and that's kind of a similar thing here. It's a bigger park, a bigger facility, but in terms of the people who show up, it's all red.
It's kind of crazy. We're at the end of, at least for the foreseeable future, the football team going down there in the DFW Metroplex and playing in Arlington against Texas A&M. But it seems like for baseball, this is they don't have any plans to kind of stop going down there from, I know they have an agreement in the future already to go back. They've played there some already. From your perspective, having, you know, covered both the football game that's in a professional stadium, you know, at AT&T Stadium, and this baseball classic down there, you know, it's always struck me, the Southwest Classic when it was played there, just kind of how big the stage felt being in an NFL stadium, and kind of just the whole operation of it for us, the press box, for the players, you know, playing on a field that the Cowboys sometimes play on the very next day. I'm curious with this baseball classic, though, is it kind of a similar thing where you get, how much of the professional aspect do you get aside from clearly just being in that facility?
Well, I think it excites the players because, you know, they are playing on an MLB field in an MLB stadium, which is where all of them have dreams and aspirations of getting to. And, you know, so sometimes it depends on the opponent. Sometimes it depends on the day of the week, you know, like Sunday games. They'll play Michigan here on Sunday. They played Michigan here on Sunday last year. That had a much different feel to it because it was a morning game. It'll be a morning game again this year. But you think about when Hagan Smith struck out 17 against Oregon State last year, that had a huge big time feel to it. And so I suspect these first two games will have that kind of feel like you're talking about. We'll see what Michigan's like, just because they don't bring anybody down here for this event. But yeah, I mean, it's something Arkansas is planning to come to for as long as they'll have them. And as long as Arkansas fans keep buying up, you know, 15,000 tickets a game, I can't see any reason that Rev Entertainment, who puts on this event, is going to say, you know, don't come anymore. They've got, I think, verbal agreements through the late 2020s to come here. And, you know, they've got a contract signed for next year to start the season here. They'll actually play four games here to start the 26th season. We don't know who the first three opponents will be, but we know that in addition to the Friday, Saturday, Sunday games, they'll stick around and they'll play Tarleton State from Stephenville, which is about 85 miles southeast of Arlington. They'll end up playing them on that Monday. So it's something that Arkansas is not going to give up anytime soon. I think that there was an appeal to have Arkansas here in part because of you know, the crowds that would show up for those games at AT&T Stadium, like you're talking about against A&M. I think the Rangers people saw that and were intrigued by it. And I think they have been probably floored, to be honest with you. But certainly it's exceeded their expectations in terms of, you know, what a team, you know, will bring to this event when Arkansas is done. It's they love having the Razorbacks here. I know that.
You know, listening to between the in-game interviews, you know, against Washington State and then post-game and stuff, it was clear that, you know, it definitely affects players playing in the cold. Now you're going into an environment where, you know, clearly not concerned about the weather indoor. I'm just, from your perspective, how much should this weekend, I guess in a sense, be kind of a better way to judge some of these hitters? You know, like, how much does it actually affect the game whenever they're out there in the cold as opposed to when they get a chance to be indoor?
Yeah, I don't know if it affects hitters so much as it affects pitchers because of the feel of the baseball. You know, these starters who all pitched pretty well last week, I'm really intrigued to see what they're going to be doing inside on a little bit of an expanded pitch count. All of them will be probably about 5 to 10 pitches more than what they're able to throw against Washington State if they can make it that far into the game. I think you'll see probably a little bit of an increased velocity from all of them because they're going to be playing in, you know, in ideal temperatures. I think it'll play a factor on the mound, probably a little bit more than the hitting. Obviously, you know, if you get a ball, you think about Brent Iredell and the ball he hit in the ninth inning of the first game of the doubleheader last week against Washington State. He hit it into the teeth of the wind. I mean, if you're playing, you know, if he hits that in Arlington, that's going to go several rows deep into the stands. On a different day in Fayetteville, that's going to go off the batter's eye and it's going to be a game-winning home run. So there are, you know, some elements that I think will benefit the hitters. But more than anything, I think playing indoors helps the pitchers because they're just able to get a much better feel for the baseball.
Speaking of the pitchers, the rotation announced yesterday, just what are your thoughts on it? It seems like it's probably what you expected based on what you and Bubba were talking about yesterday on here.
Yeah, Yeah, it's what we thought it was going to be. And we kind of had a little bit of a hint that it was going to be Gage Wood in that game three role. Obviously, we didn't know until it was officially announced. But, you know, when Van Horn had mentioned the day before that you probably just go based on who's better rested, I think that, you know, that made sense to put Wood in there. And then, you know, like Bubba and I talked about yesterday, it's one thing to have another hard-handed or another hard-throwing right-hander in the bullpen. They've got that. They've got Christian Fouts. They've got Carson Wiggins. They got a lot of guys who can line up the radar gun from the right side of the bullpen. They don't have that from the left side in the bullpen. And I think that that's a huge weapon to have with Bielski's potentially, you know, pitching out of the bullpen this weekend once, maybe two times. We'll see, you know, in what role he's needed and when. You know, it wouldn't surprise me to see him maybe pitch a couple of times this weekend. And, you know, I think that it's different whenever he's going out there and he's told, hey, you know, we need you for five, six innings, however far you can take us, and the type of pitches he'll throw. And if they say, hey, you know, we need you to get us through the ninth and we need you to just let it rip. And I think he can do that. I think he can run it up to 96, 97 miles an hour. And he's got such a unique short arm action that I think he can be really hard to hit from the left side. So it didn't surprise us at all, you know, to answer your question. And I think that'll probably be the rotation for a few weeks moving forward, so long as these pitchers who are in the starting rotation don't have bad outings.
You know, I was intrigued yesterday hearing Bubba talk about you know, like we're used to, because they've been here the past couple of years for regionals, Kansas State and TCU kind of knowing that style of play where they're just, it's pretty chaotic once they get on base. And I was intrigued hearing him talk about how he thinks that, you know, with Arkansas playing a little bit more of that just aggressive style on the bases this year, how it helps them defensively, kind of maybe being more prepared for that this go around. I'm curious, what did you think of the team from its opening weekend from just a defensive standpoint, fielding? I know Washington State got pretty bunt happy, especially in that last game. What'd you think of what you saw from them from a defensive standpoint?
Well, I thought the catching was good. I thought the infield defense was good. I thought the outfield, you know, and you heard Dave Van Horn say this. He said the outfield defense was just kind of average. A lot of miscommunication in the outfield. You know, it kind of goes back to, you're playing in those conditions last weekend. The wind was doing some weird things on some fly balls. You're not going to have any of that this week, you know, in a closed environment. So, yeah, I mean, I thought they were fine defensively. They're fielding 985 through four games. It's a, you know, that's a solid number if they can keep it in that range this year. So I thought they were good. You know, to Bubba's point about how this style helps the team, I was talking to Matt Hobbs before the season, and, you know, we were talking about just self-assessment after last season and how when you get eliminated on your home field, you kind of go back and you reevaluate everything. And, you know, what he told me was that, you know, there were some things that they did that he thought a high-level pitching staff shouldn't be doing. And I asked him, I said, well, like what? And he said, well, like holding base runners. He said, we didn't hold base runners very well at the end of last season. And, you know, he said that that's something that, you know, he really wishes that they could have back. Well, you fast forward to the fall and they're having to hold base runners a lot because Arkansas is moving on the bases a ton offensively. So I think that's kind of what Bubba's talking about, is that the style of play that Arkansas has implemented has really forced the pitchers to be able to be conscious of base runners. And that's one thing, you know, older pitchers, they figure it out. Freshman pitchers, they kind of have to learn how to do that because, you know, when you're in high school and you can throw 94, 96 miles an hour, there are not a lot of people getting on the base against you because you're just blowing it by them and you're striking out 13, 15, however many a game. That's not going to be the case in college. And so the freshmen really are the ones that have to learn how to hold base runners. And, you know, we even saw in the preseason against some of these freshman pitchers, when the base runners would get on base against them, they were challenging those guys to see how well they could hold them. And, yeah, I think Kansas State, especially tonight, if they're anything like they were last year, they're going to be awfully active on the bases. That was, I think, Ethan, you used the word chaotic. It was chaotic watching that team last year on the bases.
Yeah, Matt, we'll leave you on this. You just alluded to Kansas State a little bit, but specifically, you know, the team starts tonight. That is their opponent, Kansas State. What are some of the things you're maybe looking at the most entering this matchup that you're going to have your eye on?
Well, you know, I was intrigued to see that Kansas State's going to start this left-hander, Jacob Frost. He's a bullpen guy, and he's only thrown 2 2/3 innings all year, and he's pitched twice, so a couple of short relief outings for him. You know, looking back at him last year, he did start for them 8 times on the weekend, so he does have, you know, some starting experience in his past. So I'm interested to see with him, is this a deal where they're pitching him to go deep into the game, or is this more of an opener situation? I'll be intrigued by that. Also, you know, Arkansas didn't see they did see some left-handed pitching, so maybe I'll take that back. Last week against Washington State, but I thought they might see 3 right-handers in the starting rotation this week between what TCU and Michigan was planning to do too, and so it's a little bit different than I guess I was expecting coming into this. And then for Arkansas, you know, can Gabe Gackel be dominant? I think he can be. He came in last year in this stadium against Oklahoma State in a really tight situation. I think it was, I can't remember if it was the 9th inning, Ethan, or the 10th inning, but the bases were loaded, and Oklahoma State, all they had to do was score a run, and he got a couple of strikeouts and got him to the next inning. And so, that was a big performance as a freshman last season, you know, in this environment. And then, you know, Arkansas offensively, what do they look like? Are they able to, barrel up some balls this weekend? I think the pitching, I don't know if Kansas State's going to have a lot better pitching than Washington State did. I know TCU will with Kirk Sarlos. And so I'm very interested in that TCU game tomorrow night, how well they're going to hit against what ought to be a pretty good pitching staff.
Well, Matt, rest your voice as best as you can. Thanks for exercising it a little bit this morning, joining us via call. But when we come back, you know, Flow Baseball February means that spring football March is right around the horizon, and Christina Long's going to join me to talk a little bit about spring football. We're 17 days away, so stay tuned.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Welcome back in. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. Serving its community since 1971, Bentonville Glass is committed, professional, and versatile. Looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas? Looking for skilled craftsmanship? Choose Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. Come by and see us at 507 South Main in Bentonville or at bentonvilleglass.com. We're joined in the studio by Christina Long. Mentioned it before the outro, we are 17 days away from spring football beginning.
You said that and I got scared.
I know. I was like, me and you're going to have to fire up the spreadsheet. We're big spreadsheet people over here, and we like to track things via the spreadsheet. But with spring football beginning in 17 days, I kind of wanted to do a little preview of maybe players that we are excited to see in spring football. Maybe not excited, but more or less just intrigued. Like, we're curious to see what they look like in those practices. I think the way we'll do this, you'll give one, I'll give them. We're each going to give 5. And I actually, when I said pick 5 before we entered the show today, I made a list of like 10 because there's so
many. I only have
5,
so if we doubled up, which I'm sure we did.
If we doubled up on any, I got you because I went 10. I think there's so many intriguing players that I'm ready. I'm ready to talk about some different ones. Actually, the way we're going to do this to make sure we don't double up, I said we'll go back and forth. Christina, you give your 5. I'll give my 5.
Give my 5? Okay. One of them is kind of a cheat. So, okay. But we'll get there.
Okay.
Omega Blake is the first one. I know you're big on the Omega Blake hype train. You feel really good about him.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's interesting. I think I maybe underestimated, you know, when he first got here, you know, first hear the announcement, it's like, okay, he's here from Charlotte, whatever. Then you go back and actually look, and you know, he's very interesting because he started his career at South Carolina, had a really good first season for them. Honestly, it looked like it was kind of in front of him to take a step forward with them. You know, they had a lot of guys leaving. He was kind of looked like he was going to be kind of rotating into a more prominent spot for South Carolina. Enters the portal, lands at Charlotte, has a great season at Charlotte. We've said about 10 times on this podcast about the, you know, yards per reception number being second best in the country. What was it, 25?
Yeah.
You know, so a huge deep ball threat. I think it's important because I don't know that they have another one. At least not that is immediately apparent. He's probably, you know, they don't have a lot of big, tall, go up and get it type guys. They have a lot of smaller, fast guys. And so I think he's going to really stand out in that sense. And so I'm just curious what he does because it feels like there's such a big opportunity here for him.
Yeah. Arkansas almost had the Charlotte trade with Bobby Petrino going and interviewing his OC and then Omega Blake comes in. But hey, they're on the same team, both at Arkansas. Who's your second player?
Second one? Rohan Jones, who I guarantee you I'm going to call Rohan Gaines several times on this podcast in stories throughout the season. It's going to happen, I promise. I wrote it in my notes and then said, nope, Rohan Jones. Promise it's going to happen. Tight end Rohan Jones, the transfer from Montana State. I, you know, have heard from some people just since he's been on here that it seems like he's, you know, it seems like they've got something with him. He is kind of the heir apparent to Luke Haz in terms of being the pass-catching threat that they want at tight end. It seems like that's kind of why they brought him here. You know, I did a commitment analysis on him talking to a Montana State writer, and they were really, you know, impressed with him. He's an interesting case because, you know, he's from Canada, and the person that I talked to had kind of mentioned that they thought maybe that's kind of why he sort of flew under the radar. Not the sole reason, but a contributing factor. So he started his career at Maine, then moved up to Montana State, which is, you know, an FCS powerhouse right now. And so it's interesting that he's kind of climbed the ladder, lands in the SEC. I'm just kind of curious, you know, I don't think it's fair necessarily to say, okay, this is going to be the next Luke Haz because of how strong Luke was and how important he was. But I do think, obviously, they need to replace the pass-catching production at tight end, and it seems like this is the guy they want to do it. So I'm curious how he actually, you know, what he actually looks like and how they actually want, how much they use him and how they use him. Because like I said, they don't have a lot of big bodies at receiver. He could potentially present that as a tight end.
Yeah, and God bless Montana State writers.
I know
that they exist.
I know.
I was like, man, that's awesome that you're able to find one who could talk about him in depth. They hear us talking about this cold baseball weather and literally laugh at us.
They're, I know, like when I interviewed the Washington State coach on the show last week, and he was like, "It's 3 degrees," and then this week now it's been last weekend we were like, "Oh, it's so cold," and then now we're actually feeling like a little bit of what they've had.
Yeah, no, these FCS programs that play in the Dakotas and Montanas, they brave the real cold weather.
Yeah.
Who is your third?
Third, I have Mike Washington,
okay,
the running back, because and he was like not that on my radar, probably not that was which was probably not a good thing on my end, but until I did an interview with Taylen Green for our upcoming issue of Hogs Illustrated, and he was like, Mike Washington, kind of one of the fastest guys on the team, and I was like, okay, you know, especially looking at, like I said, the small fast guys they brought in at receiver. These are, a lot of these guys are like former track guys or like, you know, whether in high school or at the college level, you know, they're all speedy. And so for him to kind of, for Taylen to note that, I was like, okay, I'm interested. And I think because of the Braylon Russell sort of question and how is Braylon going to do, how much are they, you know, basically is it going to be Braylon's number one and then kind of everybody else? Because I'm, that's not really clear to me. I am interested to see what they come out in as far as running back as a whole, and Washington is a huge part of that.
Yeah, and it surprised me whenever you told me that Taylen said that, because when I did that commitment analysis, and it was all about size and speed, but usually whenever you hear size and speed, the size stands
right,
out in your brain.
Like, oh, he's fast for his size.
Exactly, yeah. But it sounds like he's just fast.
Yeah.
So.
And he's big. I mean, he's going to be, what, the biggest running back that they have? So.
Yeah, him and Braylon, I'm sure, I mean, in my head, I'm like,
yeah, Braylon's not small. So.
Yeah, they're not small, so they got to be the biggest two, I would think.
Yeah.
Number four for you.
I'm so offense heavy here, and I'm sorry for that. Corey Robinson on the offensive line, because of the fact that, you know, you and I had been talking as we were kind of looking at doing this football recruiting issue of Hogs Illustrated that's about to come out. You know, last season it was so easy because it was like, all right, new quarterback, new lead running back. Those are the guys you put on the cover of your magazine. Those are the guys you talk about. It did not feel like they had kind of a big splash in the portal this year based on circumstance, not necessarily because all the guys, you know, it doesn't mean all the guys they brought in are bad or not worth talking about. It's just they didn't have, you know, it's not a new star starting quarterback and new star running back. Robinson felt like the biggest, like, sort of win for them as far as talent level, experience level across the board. And so I think I'm interested how much he can do for this offensive line, because this is someone who has played so much football, comes from Georgia Tech. I think they feel really good about him. I think getting him was really important. And then that kind of leads into how the offensive line is a big question, you know, going into spring too, because they're probably going to have to move some guys around. It's going to be sort of a project to figure out best five, best way to organize those five. And so I think he is for sure going to be a really important part. I think how it kind of shapes around him and just how good he can make them is what I want to see.
All right, finish this off. Who's number five?
This is my cheat. I put the secondary guys, because it's kind of all of them, because I think the secondary is so interesting to me, because they actually, they lost a lot. You know, obviously Braxton is the big one. The elder Metcalf is kind of one that you were kind of hoping would stick around and develop more as kind of the big departures. They lose a lot to, you know, graduation. But I think the guys they have, they actually still have a solid group coming back. And then the guys they've added are kind of a mixed bag of, you know, you've got a junior college guy, you've got kind of varying levels of experience, varying levels of starting playing time. So I think just kind of how those guys are going to be used and how those are going to sort of slot in with what they have coming back. I think that whole unit is interesting to me because it is a real mix of old and new. And so where, you know, they didn't bring any of these secondary guys in because they don't think they're going to be able to play. You know, they're going to compete, but kind of who sort of stands out in that group, whether it's new or old, is going to be notable to me.
For sure. And there's a lot of new faces in the secondary, so that's valid. It's kind of like, how do you just pick one?
Right.
And you've heard us mentioning these commitment analyses often. These are really helpful for us, and I think it would be for you, the listener. You can find those on wholehogsports.com. We did one for each transfer that came in, so those are really helpful. We talked to reporters that have covered them and kind of are familiar with them. We've done it now two transfer cycles, and I know for me last year it was crazy to see how often things that we talked about in those panned out. Like I did a Rodney Hill one, a Steven Dix one, and literally I look back on those all the time. I'm like, well, we got what they said we got. So
it's helpful to distinguish too between all these new guys, you know, for us even for fans to learn, you know, as you're learning all these new guys. I think that's a complaint that fans have a lot now with the transfer portal era, is I don't even know who's on the team. And it takes so long to learn. And so I think that's one thing that, you know, we feel the same way. It's all these new guys, and I have to figure out, you know, I've talked about how I get Rodney Hill and Tyrell Reed confused like all the time. I don't know why. Like, they're just, the names flip in my brain.
I literally had to start just calling Tyrell Reed Bird, because that's what they call him. It's the only thing that works.
I need to remember
that.
But here's the thing. I'm going to start calling the other guy Bird on accident. So, yeah. But no, so things like that, where it's like, I got to learn all these people. I got to differentiate between them. And, you know, these help us a lot. The issue of Hogs Illustrated that's going to come out has, you know, we've included a breakdown of kind of who's out and who's in at different positions. So kind of that'll be out before spring practice starts. So it helps a lot with, you know, learning all the new faces, because there's like two dozen.
Yeah. I feel like December for us, whenever all this transfer stuff is going on, we're like teachers in August having to learn a whole new class roster.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, how can I put face with names?
That's so, where the spreadsheet comes in. The spreadsheet,
we are
put
ready.
All the notes I need, everybody's name. Yeah. Last year I made a Quizlet of jersey numbers and names.
Quizlet. That would be fun. Or we can do, what's it called? Kahoot it.
Oh my gosh. Wow. I would love to do a football Kahoot with you. Oh my God.
It's
an
open invite.
We should do that on the podcast.
Yeah.
Matt wouldn't do it, but we should do it.
Yeah, we'll do it. The Kahoot it music just brings me back to junior high major. I'm going to go through mine real quick. We had a little bit. I told you I had my 10 deep. We had three same on there, but good thing I got a roster. Here we go. I'm going to fly through kind of my five. Braylon Russell, I'm very intrigued. I mean, just as a returner, we all know what went on with the portal drama, that it was in and out, in and out. And then he comes back he's back in time for the Liberty Bowl. Didn't have as much of a role as he probably would have had he been, you know, the whole time with the team that month. Had a decent showing there. And he's kind of expected this year to enter in maybe that lead back role. We don't really know between him, Rodney Hill, and Mike Washington. I'm intrigued just to see how Braylon Russell looks after, you know, it's one thing to have production as a freshman. It's always hard to keep it going as a sophomore and build on that. But especially after just kind of the saga of the offseason, I'm like, are you going to be able to kind of you've put a target on your back, I guess is the way I'm trying to say it. Like, you need to perform if you're going to go through all this drama just to have fans fighting over you all the time. I'm intrigued to see what Braylon Russell does, kind of if he is in that lead role. My next one, Courtney Crutchfield. I think I'm intrigued to see him just because we don't really haven't seen him aside from when he played at Pine Bluff. And I wasn't at Pine Bluff games. I just heard what I heard and watched a little bit of huddle film. He was dynamic in high school. I mean, there's a reason he was as highly recruited as he was. He's got a year of getting bigger and in the weight room at Missouri. He's now getting an offseason at Arkansas to get in better strength conditioning. I'm just curious to see how Courtney Crutchfield fits into the equation, how prominent of a role they have planned for him. He's one that I'm kind of looking at. Mine is also offensive heavy. I was going through this. I was like, but it's because they had to really reload offensively, I think, like more so than they did defensively. Caden Kittler, offensive lineman, transferred in from Central Florida. Really good pass blocker, pretty good run blocker too for the for UCF this past year. He's a guy who I'm intrigued to see because he's played center at UCF so much. And you would just assume, I think, coming to Arkansas, that's where they're going to slot him, especially whenever you lose your starting center like Arkansas did. But I am curious to see if maybe there is a plan to shuffle the line some and just see where he mixes and matches, because this is a guy that I think it's not if he's going to be on the line. It's just where center feels the most, you know, it just makes the most sense. But we'll see how that is. I think that they actually, you know, they went so heavy in the portal with linemen that they have a lot to choose from right now. It's just kind of who are the best five, where are you going to put them? I think, yeah, you mentioned Corey Robinson. Him and Caden Kittler, both I look at as those portal guys that they got in that I'm, in my head, like, no doubt they're going to find a spot just where. I kind of cheated too. You know, you said secondary. I did a Ken Talley / Justice Boone, these transfer DNs that they got in. I feel like you don't go get upperclassmen guys like that, even if they aren't that proven with their college production, unless you have a plan to play them. You know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
Boone is interesting to me, especially because he had, you know, he was doing so well and then he had an injury that really has affected his career. And so it seems like he's really trying to use this year to show that, like, he can still be the player he was before the injury. And so I think that's something that, you know, I think he'll be on a mission, you know, which I'm interested in.
And I feel like every year there's maybe a couple portal guys who come in that you weren't really too, there was no reason to be sold on them, but no reason to not be, like, excited to see what they can do. And I feel like one of those two is going to end up being that. I think one of the two will have a role on this team. I'm curious to see in spring practices if one of them starts to stand out. I'll wrap us up. The last one I'm interested to see in spring practices, Tavion Wallace, freshman linebacker. I think this is a dude. I've seen some photos of him in practice stuff. I'm like, that is a freshman. And not only this is a freshman, this is, he should be still in, like, other kids his age are finishing up high school right now. He enrolled early. This guy, highly recruited, looks already not like a freshman. I think he'll get to see some reps. I don't know, you know, how deep on the depth chart he'll be to start off, but this is just a guy that I'm excited to see what he can do. Real quick, before we go to another break, we had a new Hogs Illustrated. We've talked about it a little bit, our recruiting issue. It comes out every year, this edition. Maybe give a little tease of what is in that edition.
Yeah, we're sending it to the printer today, Friday. So it should be out probably in the next couple of weeks. Should be hitting mailboxes for subscribers, and we'll be sharing how you can get a copy if you want one and you're not a subscriber. This is our annual recruiting issue, so this is the one where we go through everybody in the freshman class. It's interesting how much it has changed since, you know, this magazine's inception years ago, where how different recruiting is, where normally this issue would come out this time of year and everybody had just signed. You know, it was February, like everybody had just signed. Now every high school signee that we wrote about signed in December, and all but I think 7 of them are on campus right now. So it's a little bit different. And I've kind of, you know, we do the same thing every year where we include, you know, we call them capsules. You know, it's kind of like a bio of every player. And we have, you know, some high school stats, you know, recruiting info, what they said about their visit to Arkansas. And then we talk to all their high school coaches, whether it's a head coach or an assistant, about, you know, what their skills are and what they brought to their high school team, what they think they can do in college. And so that really helps give some analysis and some context for the high school guys. We've also added a lot of transfer coverage, so breaking down who's in, who's out at each position. It was even a good refresher for me as we kind of get back into football mode here for spring practice in a couple of weeks of, you know, okay, who's gone again and who's here and where are they slotting in and you know, what to know. And then Ethan wrote a really nice story about the expectations for the five transfer wide receivers. And so, you know, how they're kind of trying to build on the first year of the Petrino offense, even though all these guys are new, all but one of them is new to the offense under Petrino, and kind of how they're hoping to take a step forward with this offense while being new. So I think there's a lot of good stuff in it. I think there's good information in there at going into spring practice that kind of can serve as a primer and serve as something to reference as, you know, we start to learn about these new guys and see what happens. But I mean, I think I'm excited about it. I think it's turned out really well. We've got a little bit of baseball stuff in there too. Matt wrote a baseball column. Clay Henry's Where Are They Now is a baseball story too. So there's a few different offerings in there. And you talked to Kevin Richardson about his job with the Patriots coming up, and I loved that interview because Kevin was one of my favorite players as a kid. So I shouldn't say kid. I was probably in high school. I was an old kid. But, you know, I think it was fun to hear from him and see his success too.
Yeah. This edition is always, it's kind of a monster, not going to lie, but it is always one that I feel like I look back on in, you know, kind of the way that we had our baseball preview. It's just a great reference for later on. And I think that, you know, the readers will be benefited by that as well. We're going to come back and we're going to talk a few other things in across Razorback Athletics, but first a break.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart. We are design.
Welcome back in. Joined at the desk still by Christina Long. We're going to have a little bit of fun on this segment, giving our best of the week and worst of the week here in just a little bit. But first, a few other things to talk about in the world of Arkansas athletics. I'll talk softball real quick. They just got done yesterday beating Rutgers and Cal State Fullerton 10-0 in five innings in both of those games. Same score. They're just really dominant right now. To win seven in a row by run rule, which is a program record for most in a row, to win in that way, is really impressive. It's just right now they're firing on all cylinders. I do these game stories and it's like why they won. I'm like, well, because they were better in like literally every single facet. But it's cool to see right now the way that they're clicking. They're having a lot of fun. They have another game today at the Marionette Classic, which if you have bit the Flow Sports bullet, this is as much as I will talk about Flow Sports for the rest of the year, I promise. But it's fun to watch. The stadium is just gorgeous. They have the most beautiful mountains you'll ever see. They're in Southern California playing this. The complex they're playing at is cool because it's like, it's like travel, but like travel baseball, softball, where it's like just a little complex with four different fields, and they're like replica in the, you know, in the outfield of major league ballparks, just with like the printed signage and stuff. So they're playing at Wrigley Field there, you know, the Cubs stadium. It's a cool tournament to watch. They've got a game against Loyola Marymount tonight, and then a doubleheader tomorrow, Baylor and UCLA, which that'll be huge for them. They're really clicking right now. Curious to see if they can keep that up. But yeah, that's softball right now. They're 12-0, ranked number 10. The other thing going on tonight, gymnastics. Christina, you have a story on wholehogsports.com today. People that aren't familiar with in gymnastics, the difference between podium and floor. You talked about this. If you'll take just a second to maybe first say what what meet they have tonight and then what those differences are.
Yeah, it's been interesting for me covering gymnastics because, you know, I've been a casual gymnastics viewer. You know, a lot of people love to watch gymnastics at the Olympics or college. You know, it's an easy sport to go and watch and like, even if you don't know the technicalities of everything. Now that I'm covering it, I'm learning a lot. And so they're at the Metroplex Challenge tonight in Fort Worth. It's a quad meet with Oregon State, Arizona, and SEMO. Oregon State's number 10, Arizona's number 19, and Arkansas is at 14 now. And so, you know, they talk a lot in gymnastics about meets being on podium, which basically just means the floor where all the equipment is that they're, you know, all the apparatuses are, is raised. So the, you know, what you might call a sideline. So all the, you know, your teammates, your coaches, everybody is kind of under you and you're up almost, you know, you're up basically on a stage. And this is something you see a lot at big meets. You know, NCAA championships are going to be on a podium. SEC championship is always on podium. Their season opening meet was on podium, and then this one is. So it's, they talk a lot about how the more experience you can get competing on podium before you get to these postseason championships, the better, because it actually changes a lot about the equipment. The floor tends to be bouncier than if you're on like the actual ground. The floor, both on floor exercise and on everything else, like the actual floor, not just floor exercise floor, important distinction. You know, so it changes kind of how you have to adapt a lot of your skills, especially, you know, on landings, which landings is something that Arkansas is working a lot on. That's where Coach Weber said that they're getting a lot of their deductions. So it's interesting how much goes into something like this. You know, for somebody who's never done gymnastics, you know, it's interesting to learn how much something like that can affect it. And then there's also the mental challenge of like, it feels like you're on a big stage because you literally are. You know, you rise up onto the stage to go do your performance. And so it's really interesting. There's so much to college gymnastics that I'm learning that's been really fun. And so I've been writing about a lot of it at Whole Hog Sports. So they're there tonight. And then you and I are going over to indoor track today because they've got the Arkansas qualifier, their last meet before SECs indoor, and then NCAAs. So trying to get everybody that they can qualified there. So we'll be over at indoor track and have some track coverage too.
Yes, we will be. Real quick, still on gymnastics. For comparison's sake, you know, Arkansas men's basketball loses Boogie Flan for indefinite, and he could do a little bit of everything, pass, rebound, assist. Gymnastics loses, at least for right now, I know they're working on getting her back, Leah Smith, mm-hmm. who she's kind of in a similar way. I feel like she could do a little bit of everything. How many different events?
She was mostly doing floor and vault.
Yeah, but even to compete in multiple events.
For sure. And she's, you know, she's one of their strongest floor performers, especially. Yeah. And, you know, she's a vet and she's been around. So she's got an Achilles sort of issue that they're basically resting her. And then Coach Weber said they're going to start kind of rehabbing it now to get her back for postseason. But they've actually, you know, they've had a couple meets without her now. And the people they've had step up in her place have actually done pretty well. So they've... You know, it could have been a bigger loss than it has been so far. They obviously want her back, and when she's ready, they're going to put her back in. But it's just interesting. You know, it is good for them that they've had people be able to step up kind of in that absence, for sure.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, is because with the basketball team, with their loss, it seems like other players have kind of, you know, it's given them a chance to really embrace that challenge mm-hmm. and step up. It seems like gymnastics has recently had some people kind of answer the bell without her.
Yeah.
Maddie Walagora, she's the Alabama mm-hmm. transfer.
Yes, and she's a vet. I mean, this is maybe her, she's either a fifth year or sixth year. They got two transfers, and one was fifth year and one was sixth year. So she's, you know, she's a veteran. She was doing it all for Alabama. And her addition on floor has been really, really good. You know, they've kind of tried her on a few different events too. And so I've been very impressed with her. I'll be curious what she does this weekend because she's had a couple meets on floor. I think they're excited about her and her progress. And so, yeah, it's setting lineups in gymnastics, I think is a unique challenge. It's different from, you know, picking your starters in other sports for sure. And I think Arkansas has some pretty solid depth that they feel good about it on most of these events.
That is the last basketball gymnastics comparison I think I'll ever make, but it just came to mind because I was like, man, they filled in really well in the absence of somebody who means a lot to the team. Now we're going to get to our best of, worst of the week. I said we would do this. Sydney, are we good? All right. Let's start off with my best of the week.
Have a ceremonial first pitch as former Louisiana Tech Assistant Communications Director in charge of...
Watch Courtney Dyfel in the back.
Corneliuson, who is now at the University of Arkansas in the same role this year, is going to throw out the first pitch. Both these teams knowing Hunter extremely well. So we're giving Hunter a little bit of a hard time. Told him it better not bounce it up there tonight because you got two teams that are going to give him some grief. And there it is. Well, not too bad by Hunter. A little lefty right there. But we should have a good one here tonight between the Bulldogs.
That is my best of the week right there. That is Hunter Corneliuson, the SID for the Arkansas softball team. He came from Louisiana Tech. They played down there this past week, and they let him throw out the first pitch. And the best part about it is just how excited Courtney Dyfel was to watch him throw the pitch. I'm about to say nobody was more excited than her. Started leaping up and down. Could have been a much worse pitch.
Mine would have been. Especially with all of them standing and watching it. Oh my gosh, I would have been so stressed. They're all standing there right next to him yelling at, you know, they're all excited for him, but oh my gosh, I would have been so nervous.
Ball wouldn't have even left my hand. I would have started throwing it and just like, why is it still
yep.
here? All right, time for my worst of the week. We're sticking with softball. This is yesterday at the Mary Nutter Classic. Bree Ellis, just doing her job, just trying to get the out. Watch her flash the thumbs up right here. She's fine. Keep it rolling. She, she's reaching out to try and make a grab at first base, and man, she just gets for lack of a better word, she just gets tackled. I mean,
yeah. Yikes.
And I'm playing this because I know Bree actually probably thinks it's hilarious. She puts at the end of the year, I think, a little highlight video of all her, like,
oh, really?
Funny moments.
That's like, awesome.
Like, I feel like she embraces those type of moments more than she does her home runs. She That's loves awesome. Those. So I play that because I think if she or her family happens to stumble across this, they probably thought that was a funny moment too. But Bree shook it off, had a multi-hit game. She's rolling. But yeah, that's my worst of the week, that she had to get run over.
That's so funny. Yeah, I love that she puts together like a season blooper reel.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
fantastic.
The season blooper reel is so funny.
That's
too.
A great idea. Everybody should do that. Okay, my best is football related, although not involving anything on field. This came out, I think, yesterday, and I just thought it was so fun.
He sweated in 5 seconds.
So for our audio only audience, this is the first little intro section to the Hog Ones little web series that they put out on social media the other day on the Arkansas football account. And it's Cam Ball, who is hosting, you know, if you've never seen Hot Ones, the show where they interview celebrities while eating increasingly hot wings. Hot Ones is a great, it's a YouTube series. It's so fun. I love, me and my whole family love Hot Ones. And they've done so many interviews with so many people over the years. And so they're basically doing that. They're dipping Tyson Razorback nuggets in increasingly hot sauces. And it's him and Marcus Dumervil, one of the new linemen. And Cam is so perfect for this because he's so funny.
Yep.
And he's honestly very natural interviewer.
Oh, because yeah.
I was thinking about it as I was watching it. I was like, okay, they probably gave him questions to ask the guys, but he doesn't, you know, he's not reading off a card. He doesn't have papers in front of him. It feels very natural. He's actually a pretty good interviewer. And then it's so funny because, you know, watching these guys eat the hot, you know, they're not wings, but eating the hot nuggets that they're, you know, they're dipping in the hot sauces. It's hilarious. And they're only like 10 minutes. I have a note for Cam. On actual Hot Ones, the host is eating the wings along with the person. He is eating nuggets. He's not dipping them. And I have a theory. My guess is maybe they shot a lot of these at the same time. Like they blocked out a couple hours and did them all at once. And so he didn't want to have to be continually eating really spicy food. So I'm wondering if, I don't know how many of these they're doing or how often they're putting them out. But I wonder if maybe there's one in there that he did it with them. I hope so, because I think it would be funny, especially if he, like, you know, I don't know Campbell's spice tolerance, but it would be very funny if it's very low and he's like struggling through the interview yeah. himself. But that's my one note for Cam, is you should be eating the hot nuggets along with them.
Brilliant. Whoever came up with this, brilliant.
Such a good idea. And they did it so well. Like, it's truly such a good, it's edited really funny. Like, there's one part, and this is what they do on actual Hot Ones, where Marcus is coughing, and they're, like, zooming in on him with every cough. It's hilarious.
And it's, like, it was just brilliant all across the board, whoever came up with this, because they're using also, I mean, the Tyson partnership.
Yes,
I mean,
smart.
Very smart.
They also came up with witty little Arkansas-related names for all the sauces, because they're not, you know, they're not promoting a sauce brand, so they covered up all the labels
yeah, yeah.
and wrote their own sort of names for the sauces. They're hilarious.
Yeah, and Cam Ball, we've talked about it all football season. Anytime he gets interviewed, it always comes back to he talks about grilling
oh, yeah.
and food. And mm-hmm. just the fact his personality and his whole, like, he loves meat. Like he loves to grill out, and I'm sure this is just right up his alley.
It's super fun. So I love that they're doing that. I'm excited for that. I don't know who else, you know, I don't know who all is going to be on there with him. I think it sounds like it's going to be mostly new players. But I'm interested to see what else they do. I thought it was really fun. But my worst, I don't have.
I was thinking about.
This.
I was like, we probably should have done these reverse. We're about
That's
to end
true.
On such a
That's
sad
true.
Note.
That's true. My worst, and I don't have a clip for it, is Trevin Brazil literally scoring for Auburn. Literally no. giving them points. And I don't want to dunk on him too hard because I'm sure it has been rough. He did not have a good game. I'm sure he's been hearing it from yeah. a lot of people, which, you know, that sucks. That's a downside of being an athlete, especially, you know, social media era. I'm sure it's been, I, you know, so I don't want to just like dunk all over him. But I don't remember the last time I saw that. I'm sure it happens more often than you would think, especially in college. But I don't remember the last time I saw somebody yeah. have an own goal in basketball.
I'll dunk on my honorable mention worst of the week. The announcer for Flo. I said last time mentioning him. This is actually my last time mentioning Flo. Maybe. Robin Heron has a no-hitter going through entering the final inning yesterday against Cal State Fullerton. She had just thrown a no-hitter her previous appearance against Louisiana Monroe in Ruston the weekend before. She was about to have back-to-back no-hitties, and this announcer commits the cardinal sin. It's not like he wasn't, like, he unintentionally did it. Literally starts to say, I know you shouldn't do this as an announcer. And if he's watching this, I'm sorry. You asked for it. I am dunking on you, I guess. But he just starts saying, like, that the whole, like, as an announcer, you aren't supposed to do this, but I feel an obligation. She has a no-hitter going right now. And you know what that would be? That would be back-to-back to going. Before he could finish his sentence, Robin gives up a triple to break her no-hitter.
And it was like the last inning, right?
Last inning. She's three outs away. That runner gets thrown out or tagged out on a double play, like the next at bat. Like, there's no doubt. Had he not said that, we would have had a no-no.
So you're a real believer in jinxes.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. And so it was just a what are you doing, man, moment. And if I'm not the only one dunking on him right now. I checked social media yesterday, and there was a lot of dunking going on, but that is my honorable mention worst of the week. Probably should have been my worst of the week, but I had the Brie clip. So anyway, I guess we'll end on a double negative note.
Yeah.
But anyways, everybody, thanks for tuning in. This has been a fun Friday episode, at least for me. We hope that you'll stay warm this week, and we know there's still some cold weather, and you have plenty of Flow Sports baseball to watch. Have a good weekend, everybody.